Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah. Hey. 6:11, welcome to the program. Show number 793, December 8th. Date your checks accordingly. People write checks anymore? Some people write checks anymore. You write a check, Dave?
Some you have to send checks. I mean, sure. It's the only practical way to do it.
We need to set up an automatic debit for this show so people can just pay for what they hear right away. What? You're not paying for this? What? This kind of entertainment? Kim Potts is on later, former winner of Best Guest of the Year.
Kim
will be talking some television. So everybody on this show, get your television questions together now. So later on when Kim Potts is on, nobody goes, what did I want to ask about? What did I want to ask about? What did I want to ask about? Write them down. Mary?
I'm writing them down.
All right, then. Also on the show today, Elise Glink. She'll be on later in studio talking about a number of things related to finance. Remember Ty Pennington? Remember when that house makeover thing was like one of the coolest things you could watch on TV?
Yeah, I remember. And he would make appearances at all the home shows.
And it's over now.
I know. Yeah. He's a good guy, though.
Ty Pennington has a foundation he wants to talk about, and we like Ty, so he'll be on. Politics, we focus on that in the 7 o'clock hour. Chuck Todd coming up before this hour is over, and Nick DiGilio in a few minutes. Everybody all right? Everybody have a nice night?
All good.
Yes. How about you, Steve?
Well, it's fine, thanks. Appreciate your concern, Dave. I got an early start on Christmas shopping, and now I've just hit a wall.
Oh, no.
Me too.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I thought I'd be done. But now.
It's bad, isn't it?
I wandered in the streets aimlessly yesterday.
Are your cards done?
I know, I'm not sending cards.
I'm not doing cards either.
Does anybody do cards anymore?
I get a card from a friend of mine who lives in Champaign, and I get a card from a friend who lives in California.
You send cards to?
No, Sandberg Boyle.
Sandra Boyle.
Yes, she sent
nice
cards
of her family, and she looks like fairly normal in the card, which we know isn't true.
I still write a letter.
Oh,
you write a Christmas
letter?
You're
one of those people, Mayor.
But the thing is, with Facebook,
your family's
now,
health problems?
Everybody knows what everybody's doing on Facebook. So I think that's why people don't send cards anymore.
No, people don't send cards because they're lazy.
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah.
But everybody loves a picture. Everybody loves a picture of somebody's family.
Remember when you used to have cards that you could actually line around? If you have a fireplace, you could line your mantle on your fireplace. You'd have them all over. Yeah. You wouldn't have room for all the Christmas cards.
It used to be cool.
Now you get 3, 4, 5 cards. It's a big deal.
I get a lot of cards. And I love the cards. And I love the pictures of babies and elves.
Yeah, but that's because you're working the nursing home circuit.
What?
You know, you're going, you are. You're going out to the nursing home circuit. And I just figured this out. You're doing the nursing home circuit for the cards. I'm not even sure you just go visit your mom. I think you go to other nursing homes.
I do not.
Oh, you're going and you're sucking up to the older people, and then they're sending you the cards.
Can I ask
you
a question? They do love me at the bingo.
Hey, before I leave, here's my address. Remember me at Christmas card time.
But what
I know how you work.
What do you do with the Christmas cards the day after Christmas?
I'll tell you what I do with garbage.
I save mine, and then I put them up the next year on the door.
I put all my pictures.
Hold it.
That's what I do, too.
You just rotate your cards year to year?
Because nobody sends cards anymore, and I love the way it looks around my door frame, so I save them. I mean, it's a good look, and there's still cards that I've received. It's not like I'm
fire
hazard. I'm just going to say it. You guys are big dorks.
What? I put mine around.
You save your cards.
I have a certain wall, and I put all of my cards with pictures on the wall, and I keep them up there till at least March.
March.
Yes, because I like to look at them, and people put a lot of work, and they, you know, shutter fly, whatever.
Oh my God! And especially the letters. If I get a letter, it goes from the envelope to the trash.
Thanks a lot. I worked hard on my letter,
but I know you. I see you every day.
Well, that's why I don't send you one,
and I don't really care about what you're. Well, you marry, of course, but
right. But I don't send you
a letter. Your third son, once removed, is doing.
I only send letters to like the older relatives who want to know what's going on.
Because you work in the nursing home circuit.
Oh, you people.
There's older people Mary hasn't even met yet. Hey, by the way, if your nursing home hasn't had Mary come over, please give us an address. Mary will be making the tour throughout the Christmas season.
I love the people at the homes. They're fun.
They are great.
They got a lot of great stories.
Who loves old people more than me? Nobody.
Apparently
not
you.
No, I love, you kidding me? I love sitting around and listening to old people talk. You know why? Because they're smarter than we are. Because they've done more stuff.
And they're so much fun.
And by the way, I can see old from here. I'm not that far away.
And old isn't
Don't look
old.
At me.
Old isn't even old anymore.
No, I just want to say the exception would be, and I'm not just saying this because she's in the room. I really am not. But Mary just got married. You know, it's a nice way to showcase, okay, you know what?
So if we get a card from Sandberg next year, we should throw it out?
Yeah. Okay. Unless there's a baby in it.
I had said my husband, I started sending cards.
Pat Boyle, Comcast Sports Now.
Yes, a couple of years ago. And I don't really like having my picture on the Christmas card because I think it's more of a kid thing. And so I'd sent out a picture of Catherine and Patrick. Well, Pat and I were not married at the time. And there's relatives of mine that haven't met them anyway, and they're like, "Who? Why are you sending this card of these kids?" Like, they didn't.
Okay, that's
so
funny.
So the next year I did put a group photo in, so people would know. You mentioned Facebook and the cards. All of my friends on Facebook are just talking about how they're dreading doing their Christmas cards, and every day, still haven't done my cards. Still haven't done my cards. Still haven't ordered the picture cards.
It is a lot of work.
But well, if you're
December,
saying all that,
it's December 8th.
Right? Then just skip it.
Yeah, if you haven't done it by now, I think it's over.
And no, it's not.
I've told you about my Christmas card tragedy that went to California. My card got delivered to a friend.
Tragedy seems strong.
I thought somebody had a heart attack. I'm like, what is she talking
Mary
about?
Mary put a picture on
I know, and it got ripped.
I did a blog.
It said disaster.
That's fine. Hold on a second. There's a backstory here. The picture was ripped in a way that the only person you could fully see on the card was Mary. I'm not sure this was an accident.
The mailman loves
but
her.
There's a blog post on WGNradio.com.
You're assuming it was the mailman.
Well, the letter carrier, it could be a male woman, I guess.
Could have been you.
Yeah.
But I love the words, though, Mary. Tragedy.
I know.
Disaster.
Yeah. Disaster, well, I was the word.
It made me open it up right away.
See?
I'm like, oh, my gosh, what happened?
Clickbait. Do I know my stuff or do I know my stuff?
And I'm like, really? So, it's a ripped card.
And, of course, when you get a Christmas card, generally speaking, the days previously, you'd have Christmas card guilt, and you go, oh, crap, now I got to send this person a Christmas card because they sent me one. Not anymore. No.
Mine go in a tray on the kitchen table, a little Santa tray. That's where I put them. So
I got a tiny fireplace. Each year I get a smaller fireplace, just a tiny fireplace, so the number of cards actually goes around it.
Because
cards
are so irritating.
If you hang them, you can't read the backs or read the insides.
Well, but it's like reading a book. You just want to see the pictures. In my, yeah.
Well, so, Dave, I will show you guys my wall.
Yeah, in fact,
yeah, you should. You should take a picture.
Well, after I get the pictures up, yeah.
My son and daughter-in-law, who are millennials, sent out cards.
Oh, they do?
And the card without a picture. It was interesting. It was just a card and inside not a letter, but in small font.
Go Cats?
But typewritten, 6 points, six good things that happened in the past
year. That's nice.
And it was really nice.
That's great.
That's great. I sent out a letter about neighbors, just to people I don't even necessarily talk to. I go, well, the guy across the street seems to leave a lot late at night by himself. I don't know if they're having trouble. And then I send it around to people in the neighborhood.
I think I was spoiled to the letters because a friend of mine, friend of a friend actually, writes her Christmas letter as their dog, as the family dog, which is kind of a cute
That's
idea.
Kind of funny. That's
oh, yeah, good. It's funny for the first year, but.
Any chance they're listening right now?
I love the idea.
Yeah,
I
sure
think
you
it's
do.
A really yeah. cute
for a
idea.
Moment there, you forgot you were on the air, didn't you?
Well, Grzanich has his idea for 2017.
What's his 2017 idea?
Well, he's going to do it as his dog, just like that. He would love doing that. He loves talking about his
yeah,
dog.
Yeah, that's a dog book out now. The dog's purpose
hopefully,
or whatever, all written in the dog form.
Hopefully we won't be getting one.
What? Of those. What do you want? What dog? A dog book written by a dog?
Isn't it called A Dog's Purpose? All written.
Dog's purpose is smell another dog's butt.
No. It's a big book out right now.
Really? Like bestseller?
I believe, yeah. I see it all over the stores.
Are you turtling?
My husband just bought one.
Your husband bought a book written by a dog.
Well, it's kind of a gift.
Steve, get out of the house.
What to see? What's out at the show? Oh, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GN's Cochran Show. And what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Hello, friend.
I need to know what
Hello.
Nick
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you, sir?
That's okay. What do you mean? Okay? You got troubles?
No, I'm good.
I don't know. Nick sounds like he has troubles. Come on. You can deburden yourself. Is it because of Mary's Christmas cards that she keeps up until March? Is that what's troubling you?
I think so. I think that's what it is. You've tapped into it.
I thought I might. All right. So before we get to this weekend's movies, this Christmas season, for me, so far has been disappointing, and there's nothing where I go, I have got to see that movie. And usually there's three or four.
Yeah, they're saving them all, Steve. They're back end and everything. There's only a couple of movies opening up this week. Last week was nothing. You know, there were like two films that opened last week.
Yeah, it felt
week.
Like January.
But exactly. But starting on the 16th, there are like six movies, including the Star Wars movie, being released next Friday. And then from that point on till like the second week in January, it's going to be nonstop. And most of the movies are the ones that they've been holding off so that they hope to get Oscar nominations. And, you know, we're going to go from drought to drought to pouring rain.
Yeah, Oscar nominations aren't just about the trophy. Oscar nominations are a business strategy to sell the movie here and abroad and make as much money as possible.
That's right.
All right, so the movies that are coming out this weekend, one I'm very interested in, one looks amusing, and the other one I don't know. So let's go to I don't know. Lion, what is that?
It's the one I've seen already, and it's a really good film. It's based on a true story, and it's an incredible story. About a 5-year-old kid who is taking a trip, and his older brother kind of leaves him. He gets lost. The kid ends up on a train going for 2 days and ends up lost in Calcutta, in the streets of Calcutta, thousands of miles away from his home, never is able to be found, never sees his family again. Gets adopted by an Australian couple, the mother played by Nicole Kidman. And then the film flashes forward to 25 years later, and Dev Patel plays this now grown-up man who is now going to search for his family and go on this adventure to try and find his real family. It's a very good movie.
His original family.
And so he goes on, you know, to find them and has to track them down. I will say this. It is a really good advertisement for Google and Google Maps. These are tools that he uses to help find his family. And I don't know if Google. I mean, this is a true story, so obviously. But Google's going to get a nice push out of this one. But it's really Dev Patel is really quite good in it. The kid who plays the younger version, the 5-6-year-old kid who plays the younger version, is extraordinary. Nicole Kidman is good. It's a very compelling movie, and you know. It's always interesting when they base movies on true stories and you just go, how is this possible? And those are the best ones. Like, you know, you can have fictional movies that are very, you know, predictable and you figure it out. But when something is based on a true story and it's this extraordinary and this unusual, it just adds to the compelling nature of the movie. It's a good film.
You dial this back 25 years and it's pre-internet, and 25 years ago in the middle of Calcutta, you could lose a child and never see him again. I could see that happening.
Yeah.
And Nicole Kidman plays the mom?
The adoptive mom. Right.
So she goes young Nicole and old Nicole. How's the makeup for old Nicole?
No, it's fine. She looks good. It's fine. It doesn't look terrible. And the other thing about the movie is that the person that it happened to, he wrote the screenplay, and it's based on his book. So the real dude wrote the screenplay and based on his book, on his real life story.
Well,
it's a good film. It's a good film. It's called Lion. I don't know if it's opening really big. I think it's probably kind of a smaller film, so it'll probably open in about 3 or 4 theaters. But I would imagine, you know, by the end of the year, it'll probably be in a bunch more theaters. But it's a good film right out of the gate. Strong movie for this week.
Miss Sloan is compelling in trailers. What is it?
I haven't seen it. It's the great Jessica Chastain, who I think is one of the best actresses
tremendous working
today. She's great. She plays a Washington lobbyist who has been known to use very underhanded tactics to get what she wants and to push for laws and things that she wants. But at this point, she goes against the system. Helps a small firm to fight for a gun control law. So she takes on the gun control lobbyists and takes on the and it's a very, obviously this is a very touchy and controversial subject, and a subject that everybody has been talking about now for a long time. And she plays, you know, normally like this back, you know, she's like a backhanded tactic Washington lobbyist who now is morally fighting for something she believes in, and as a result is making a ton of enemies.
Right.
I've heard good things about it, and again, I will see anything with Jessica Chastain. She's phenomenal.
Really, anything? Home movies?
Yes, especially anything.
Those.
Yeah.
No, not those kind of home movies.
Hey, now.
Office Christmas Party looks funny.
You know, I think it looks really stupid, but really funny.
That's what I'm talking about. We're not talking Shakespeare here. We're talking about
I mean, you just look at the cast of this thing. I mean, how can it not be funny? Jennifer Aniston, Jason Bateman, T.J. Miller, Kate McKinnon. Courtney B. Vance, Olivia Munn, Jillian Bell, Robert Cordery, and Vanessa Bayer, among others.
That's pretty strong.
I mean, sounds good.
And you think about your own office Christmas parties and the various troubles you've had and the problems you've gotten into, and it harkens back to a more dangerous time. What?
And it was shot. And it was shot here. It was shot here in Chicago. Oh,
cool. What office?
I don't know.
Because I'm guaranteeing it wasn't shot at our Christmas party.
Hey, Nick, what's the early buzz you're hearing on Collateral Beauty? It looks awesome, but all-star cast, is that always not a good sign?
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, it. From what I've heard, it's split right down the middle. People think it's really, really syrupy and soap opera and completely over the top. And some people think that it's kind of, you know, that they were moved by it. I vomit every time I see the trailer, quite frankly.
I think it looks promising. I'm going to go promising. Oh. You go vomit.
Yeah. I'm going vomit, yeah.
Okay. All right. Works for me.
I just wanted to mention really quickly, Steve, I was killing some time, and I was, you know, like an idiot, just watching everything on YouTube because, you know, I have no life. And I watched this compilation of the 100 best shut-ups in movie history.
Where somebody yells shut up?
Yeah, so it was just a bunch of scenes from movies where people are telling people to shut up or shut the F up or shut. And one of them, Steve, right in the middle of this 10-minute montage.
Yeah, was somebody telling me to shut up, I'm guessing.
That's right, grumpy old man. I almost fell off the couch.
Well, send me that clip. That's very entertaining.
I will. I'll send it to you. It's about 5 minutes into the clip. And there you are, given the weather, and there's Walter Matthau in his underwear saying, shut up, badass.
Yep. That's great. Now I've got a compilation film.
It's fantastic, man.
That's tremendous.
It's
thanks,
like
buddy.
Modern day mixtape.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is. 6:32. All right. Big story in just a moment, and then Chuck Todd. 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
President Obama, I really like him. We have. I think I can say, at least for myself, I can't speak for him, but we have a really good chemistry together. We talk. I never met him before this, and I never spoke to him before this. I do like him. I love getting his ideas. I take his recommendations very seriously, and there are some people that I will be appointing, and in one case have appointed, where he thought very highly of that person.
Well, that was a good sign yesterday when President Obama and President-elect Trump hooked arms and they were kind of dancing up the mall in Washington towards the Washington Monument, just getting some fresh air. Brand new best friends in Washington, Trump and Obama. Are we sure we're still alive? Are we sure this isn't one big long dream?
Like Dallas? Like, remember when Pam woke up
but
Bobby
who's in
was
shower?
In the shower? I don't know.
Chuck Todd joins us, Meet the Press, MTP Daily. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, my favorite theory is that remember in Back to the Future 2, the alternative 1985,
mm-hmm.
where the bully becomes president because he stole the gambling book?
Yep.
You know, so I think we're just in. Somebody needs to get back into the DeLorean and come back. We don't know who it is, but somebody went into the DeLorean and screwed up the past.
So you think Trump has the book? Watch what he's carrying, people. Watch.
Exactly. Who knew?
Watch what he has.
Sports gambler.
I want to know who Doc is. If he promotes somebody with wild hair, goofy glasses, and kind of a long-distance gaze beyond you, that's when I start really getting concerned. Look, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that Donald Trump and Barack Obama are pals now. But we seem, Chuck, and you touched on this yesterday, and Meet the Press tweeted your video out last night. We seem to be living in an era where broken promises really don't matter. And what I said doesn't matter because it all gets written off as, that was the campaign. Well, if nothing I say matters, then how do I know what to believe?
No, and I think that this is like, gets to our larger issue here. It's like, look, I know we in the press, we're coming under siege for... and you can criticize us maybe, you know, for the tone of the Trump coverage, the intensity of the Clinton coverage. You know, that to me is all fair game. But this fake news issue, this stuff where you have the rank and file of America not believe in a certain set of facts, you know, some of the people that are to blame for that are the politicians themselves.
Absolutely.
Right? Who run on something, then break a promise, something like that, or what we're seeing here with Trump taking it to a new level where we're told you're not supposed to take his words literally. And you're sitting there going, okay, but at what point do you take his word?
Yeah, when does it matter?
To give us a guidepost, and I think that's been among the, you know, it's been our frustration in the press. But part of our job of accountability is following up on, hey, what'd you promise to do? Keeping your word.
Well, and I keep hearing from people who supported Trump throughout, who say things like, he's an emotional guy, and he'll say things, but what matters is what he does. No, I'm sorry. When you're the president of the United States, if you're president-elect, all the words matter. The words you say now, the words you tweet and beyond, they all matter.
I thought it was because he told it like it is.
Right.
I mean, no, but I mean, I've heard that too, but it's like, well, wait a minute. Is the rationale for supporting him that he's straightforward, tells it like it is? Or is the rationale, oh, he's emotional?
Well, right? Listen, both are coming out of people's mouths, but you can't have it both ways.
You okay? Trump's rewriting the rules. I don't know. You know, I mean, his voters did let him have, are letting him have it both ways. I think the question is, and this is ultimately, I think, the question is, what are the third rails for his supporters? You know, one of the other points we made yesterday is, I do think he's testing the limits of various potential opponents, right? You know, he's sort of almost with these tweets, it's almost like the guy holding the bayonet looking for a soft spot. So he wants to see, how does China react to me going after them a few times? How does Boeing react? How does Congress react when I threaten the 35% tariff? What's Paul Ryan going to say? It part of me thinks he's testing to see, will my base erupt if I embrace Romney? Will my base erupt if I say nice things about Obama? You know, he is finding out what matters and what doesn't. For instance, it looks like naming Romney would be a problem for space, right? That was where there has been visceral reaction among some of the supporters. The other stuff, so far, not.
But why does he care about his base now when everything about him was visceral and emotional and off the cuff for the campaign? You know, it goes back to conversations we've had before. I don't believe a moment of strategy comes from Donald Trump. Now, I believe he's got people around him who are trying to strategize him to invent a word. But why would he be strategic now?
You know, here's the thing with him. I think that it gets underestimated. I think your observation is correct that he's not strategic at a 30,000-foot level. But he's very strategic in individual situations. I think he's very strategic with what he's doing in China. I think in his mind, he believes it's always been too many carrots with China. I'm going to do a stick for a while. I'll do a good cop, bad cop routine. I'll appoint, you know, China's president's best friend in America, Terry Branstad, which is, you know, they actually do have a personal relationship.
Right.
But I'm going to keep poking him. So I think he's strategic in a granular sense, the individual transactions, but none of it is piecemeal in some grander strategy. That I agree with you. But there is more strategy to him in these individual situations than I think folks give him credit for.
Here's the guy I want him to be, and you got to have an SNL memory for this. But Phil Hartman played Reagan in a famous sketch.
Right.
Where
Reagan
was, you know, Reagan's bumbling in the office and he's bringing in Boy Scouts for a tour. And then the Scouts leave and he's Ronald Reagan, strategist and leader of the free world. And he's ready to go to war with Russia and he's going to do this and he's going to do that. And then somebody brings it. Mommy brings him in a cupcake. And then he's gentle Ronald Reagan again. That's the Trump I want. I want the genius behind closed doors because we need that.
Well, that's obviously what I think that's how he sees himself. He thinks that there is two or three or four different Trump personas. I think so far it's the same guy who is just ultimately, like, I will say this. I think too many people are thinking, well, maybe he'll be like this in office and maybe he'll be like that. Here's one thing I think we all need to come to grips with. He is who he is. And I think ultimately his success or failure and the success or failure of others to influence him all depends on your personal relationship with him. And I think what's interesting here is how people have figured that out. I think Barack Obama has figured out how you can ingratiate yourself with him so that he will listen. And for instance, Paul Ryan hasn't figured that out.
believe it or not. I actually think Barack Obama has figured him out better than Paul.
I think that's true. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great observation.
Chuck, do you think we're going to continue to see these business strategies played out online, social media? Carrier and Boeing specifically are what come to mind, and that's in the past 3 days.
I do, because the more people critique it, the more he's more likely to use the tool. But the second is, that's another part of him that he's, you know, you got to also remember, he's got no love for the Fortune 100. Do you know not a single Fortune 100 CEO supports
him? Right.
And, you know, the lack of respect he feels like he has received from the business community over the last 30 years is something that he's, I think it's a part of this revenge tour. You know, actually somebody close to Trump calls it the walk of shame. They think it's funny when they ought to go into Trump Tower, a never Trumper.
It does sort of look like a bad Saturday morning with a broken heel.
I have to say, this person who's pretty close to Trump said he loves it. He loves the fact that they have to be caught on camera groveling to him.
Well, you know what? That's human nature, and I can't really even blame him for it.
You can't, no.
So, all right. Meet the
biggest I told you so. The biggest I told you so mic drop tour, right?
Oh, exactly. Without a doubt. Meet the Press Sunday and MTP Daily on MSNBC. You got a plug for Sunday?
I do right now. One booking I have right now I can announce, Jerry Brown, governor of California. Or as I like to call him, the highest-ranking Democrat in the Democratic Party.
I was going to ask you that before I let you go. Is he the most powerful Democrat in the country right now?
Oh, hands down, he's the most powerful Democrat in the country. You know, policy that California set becomes Democratic staples within 6 months. So if you're looking for somebody who can actually enact policy, change policy, enact an idea, if you're a Democrat, don't go to Pelosi or Schumer. Go to Jerry Brown.
And is he constantly going to be a guy that's going to be out front when he doesn't like something Trump does, I would assume?
I think he will. You know, I think he knows he is the de facto leader of the party by default. And I can, you know, look, I've had these conversations with him myself. This is a guy who, had he been 5 years younger, probably would have been Donald Trump's opponent.
Yeah, how about that? Chuck Todd, great job as always, and Meet the Press host. And, you know, he bumped his head. He's a Packer fan. You can't hold anything against him. Look, things happen.
Oh, you know. All right. Well, you guys enjoy all those, that one Super Bowl ring. That's fair. One
and holding.
Yes.
All right, man, thanks. And we're back with the political hour, if you will. And I assume in the political hour I'll do a full review of Hairspray, because I know that Pat Brady cried himself to sleep watching it last night. Oh, I'm not going to lie to you. I was jazz hands crazy for at least an hour. All right, I watched it for 10 minutes.
I watched it for...
maybe 15.
I watched the beginning, and then I watched the end. I liked it. I thought Jennifer Hudson killed it.
Here's the thing.
So mad, I forgot it was on.
I have tremendous respect to be able to pull that off on live TV.
Yeah.
But I also like the car crashes. Was there anything obvious where they really screwed something up?
No, there really wasn't. What I watched, because I did watch a significant amount. What was cool, though, I was telling you off the air, was watching them do the costume changes.
Yeah.
And they were hopping in the golf carts. And then while the commercials were going on, they have, you know, they split screen it.
Yeah.
And you can see what's happening behind the scenes, and they're changing costumes and changing sets. That part was really cool.
I'm still not quite sure why they cast Harvey Fierstein as a woman.
I didn't.
Couldn't Harvey have
either.
Played a dude in that movie or
no.
in that play somewhere?
And
didn't John Travolta play that role in the movie, right?
Did he? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Mom.
Was he the mom, really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. I'm almost positive.
You know what was great? I love Derek Hough anyway as a dancer. He was a great singer,
too.
Oh,
he could sing?
Yeah, he was very good. I liked it.
Well, no, I mean, everybody seemed to like it, right? Yeah. I mean, aren't the reviews pretty good?
The reviews are very good this morning.
Yeah. What's the next one? They do one every year this time.
I don't know what the next one's going to be.
Did you see the last one, the Rocky Horror Picture Show one?
Mm-mm.
That was bizarre.
Not good? Horror Picture Show's bizarre.
It was okay.
They did that live in prime time?
Yeah, I was going to say, how did they clean that up?
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Governor Rauner chose to hold hostage the Illinois budget making. help his wealthy friends and large corporations.
We've already done our working groups. We are not interested in reconstituting any more groups.
The people that got held hostage were the people in Illinois who are dependent upon state funding.
I do not gather that there is any sense of urgency on behalf of the Democrat leadership to resolve this by the end of the year.
As far as I'm concerned, this should have been settled a long time ago, and it could have been settled a long time ago if everybody was reasonable about these issues.
If everybody was reasonable and saw it my way and allowed me to hide from the public, everything would be fine. I'm Mike Madigan. Vote for me and vote for the people I put up, or there'll be things I'll do to you that could ruin you. I'm Mike Madigan. Go ahead, Mike, prove me wrong. The Madigan Challenge continues. There's an open chair in your life somewhere, because even if he's sitting in a chair in a meeting, doesn't mean it's not an empty chair. His contribution to those meetings seems minimal at best, and all he wants is what he wants. Not what you want, not what the governor wants, not what the people of Illinois wants. He wants what he wants. So whenever you hear Governor Rauner talk about reform of the government, those are very frightening words to Mike Madigan, because that means Mike Madigan reform. Oh, we can't have any of that. Not as well-oiled as this machine is. Not as great as things are running. Pat Brady's here. Pat, who do you work for?
Next Generation Strategies.
Spend a lot of time in Springfield, don't you?
I do.
And I would say you understand the political machinery there pretty well.
I do.
You were an anti-Trump guy throughout the campaign.
I was. But I think I did tell you he was going to win at some point, didn't I? Or maybe not.
After he won.
After
he won.
November 9th.
So you're a guy who I believe is fair-minded. You're a Republican for life, but you're fair-minded. And you want what's best for the state. Now, I'd like you to correct me where I'm wrong here. Didn't Governor Rauner come in with, say, a 40 or so point agenda on government reform?
44.
He's whittled that down to four key points to get a budget done.
Actually, down almost two now.
Four has turned down, or has been cut all the way to two. Those two are?
Work comp reform and term limits.
Work comp and term limits. All right. I want you to hold those points for me. Eric Adelson will join us in a second. I want you to break down why those are bad for the state. Why those are things that we can't get a consensus agreement on.
Fair enough.
All right.
Now that Eric's here, too, we can get both sides of the story.
Yes. Rick Pearson's here from the Chicago Tribune. Finest political writer in America. He's got good penmanship, too, if you ever get a Christmas card or a letter from him. Hi, buddy. How are you?
Good morning, Steve.
You on the radio on Sunday?
Yes, I am. I have Democratic State Treasurer Mike Frericks on, and we'll talk about the new changing dynamics of having the treasurer and the comptroller as Democrats with the Republican Governor Rauner. But real quickly, and I never mean to correct my good friend Pat Brady, but
don't worry, his mic's still on too.
The two items for discussion for a stopgap emergency budget would be a property tax freeze and term limits.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you're absolutely correct.
Property tax and term limits again. Seem fairly popular. All right, so let's start from the inside out here. Rahm meets with President-elect Trump yesterday, meeting that seemed to be fairly quiet until he came out of it. What do we know?
Well, I mean, one of the main points that Mayor Emanuel wants to make is that he's not backing down on issues involving immigration, given the often heated rhetoric from President-elect Trump. He presented a letter from 14 mayors urging a continuation of the Dreamers program, DACA, that allows undocumented children to continue to be in this country. And Trump did signal in his Time magazine interview that he would like to find some accommodation on that. But that's one issue there. You also have the issue of President-elect talking about a massive capital bill. And, of course, involving any kind of infrastructure, you have to look at places like Illinois and Chicago for road, bridge, airport, rail, all of that very important. And you also have the fact of Chicago and the crime issue as well. And it's going to be very interesting to see the new dynamics with Jeff Sessions as the incoming attorney general. How and might that affect the Justice Department investigation in the Chicago Police Department?
When he came out of the meeting, he used very positive terms about talking with the president-elect. It seems that a lot of folks go in and speak with Mr. Trump, and when they leave, they have very positive things to say. Should we be surprised by that?
Not really. I mean, you know, we all know what how hard Mayor Emanuel can be, and how much of a partisan he can be. But at the same time, there is political pragmatism, and this is just kind of an acknowledgement of this is the new reality. This is going to be the president. This is going to be the White House. And to kind of automatically try to create some kind of blockade between the nation's largest cities and the White House is not a very good way to start things off.
Yeah, Rick, I honestly get the feeling, and it might be right or wrong, I get the feeling Trump is not a huge fan of Chicago. Specifically, we're a sanctuary city. We took the signs down bearing the honorary street name. Plus the fact that he said that he can solve the violence here in a week. I think that was a promise on the campaign trail.
You should get back on that.
Do you think, yeah.
That'd be
do
great.
You think, I mean, there will be some sort of common ground that he and Emanuel can find so Chicago can continue to get some federal money? And
yeah,
he has the power to withhold
and,
that.
And as a follow-up to what Andrea just said, how much help are we going to get from the federal government?
Right.
Well, I think, yes, we're going to, there's going to be some accommodations here, too. And as the mayor pointed out to the president-elect, you know, you're also an investor in the city. So you do have a stake in making sure things go well here. But I think, you know, the rhetoric of the campaign trail, what we've seen, and that, you know, we know the rhetoric about Chicago that Trump has used, but as we've seen on so many occasions, the rhetoric of the campaign trail is giving way to kind of the reality of what it takes to govern. And indeed, that's one of the things that Emanuel said he has counted upon is that, you know, whatever some of the more outrageous or controversial statements that the president-elect made in the campaign trail, when it comes down to governing and priorities, you're not likely to see a lot of those surface anytime.
It's Rick Pearson, the host of the Sunday Spin, soon to be the Sunday Spin on Ice. We'll have it at the Rosemont Arena, a full theatrical presentation of the show.
We have a newsroom Zamboni, so, you know.
Fantastic.
Yes.
What are you chasing today?
Well, today we have the governor is supposed to have an availability. An interesting thing here, we had the governor talking after the veto session of wanting to meet every day with the leaders, and then yesterday abruptly pulled the plug on it, contending the Democrats weren't ready to present any kind of budget parameters. But at the same time, Democrats have asked the governor and Republicans to present their budget parameters. So once again, we have both sides kind of talking past each other.
Yeah, and since the governor can present a budget and has presented several in the past that have been summarily turned down by Madigan's House, what's wrong with the governor telling the Democrats, put something up that we can talk about?
Well, there's nothing wrong with both sides putting up something that they can talk about. Both sides have presented budgets that, in fact, from the governor's side as well as from the Democrat side, that contain multi-billion dollar holes in them. They were both sides presented inadequate spending plans. There's a pox on everybody on this one. And it's up to each side to present realistic spending plans, including what and how much taxes should go up for whatever new revenue should be generated.
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, this is not splitting atoms here. This is not breaking down DNA in the basement. We know what we can't pay for, and we know what the arguable points are. So why are we still, I'm getting close to cursing here, why are we still doing this dance?
Because it begs the question of what effect term limits have on state spending, especially a term limit proposal that, quite frankly, wouldn't affect anybody in the Illinois legislature for at least 10 years.
Okay, but why term limits have been brought up. Term limits have been brought up because 42 of his 44 points are now off the table. Does the governor get anything in this discussion, or does it simply go back to the system that doesn't work that's been run by Mike Madigan?
No, I think there are definitely ways to move. For example, Pat Brady brought up workers' compensation, and there's been a lot of movement there, and I think any changes on workers' compensation, there are some things doable there. Governor has talked about a property tax freeze. Of course, everybody hates property taxes, but you can't really talk about a property tax freeze in a vacuum, particularly when property taxes pay almost the entire freight of public schools. Schools are so dependent on property taxes. If you issue a freeze there, where are the schools going to get their money? Well, ostensibly from the state. Well, the state doesn't have any money, so then you got to look at, well, then you're going to have to raise taxes. So that the property tax freeze definitely fits into a budget discussion versus term limits is a populist item. There's no doubt about that, but it has no direct bearing on state spending.
I don't think it's time. I understand that from the reporting aspect and your expertise as well, but the time to get technical on this stuff was a long time ago. If there's going to be any reform of a broken government, it has to actually include reform. And I don't see what Madigan is offering other than turning down everything the governor brings up.
Well, as even the speaker has indicated that he has he proposed working groups to go over these things. Republicans said we've had working groups on these things. But on issues like property taxes, education funding, consolidation of local units of government, those kinds of things, do have direct bearings on state spending. The impasse is all about the issues that do not really show a direct impact on state spending.
It's Rick Pearson, also the Sunday Spin. What time Sunday?
7 to 9 a.m. Get your week started. Off to a good start.
All right, thanks, man. Back in a moment with Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein, and more of this. And Trump and Obama having brunch together and then maybe seeing a play.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I delivered to the president-elect and his senior advisor and his chief of staff a letter signed by 14 mayors that put together from across the country about our DACA students. Those are students. Those are also people that want to join the armed forces. They gave their name, their address, their phone number, where they are. They're trying to achieve the American dream. No fault of their own, their parents came here. They are something we should hold up and embrace. These are dreamers who are seeking the American dream, and we should embrace them rather than do a bait and switch.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel, after meeting with Donald Trump yesterday, as Eric Edelstein joins us. Eric, where do you currently work? Because I know you got that Amway thing you do on the side.
Amway on the side, but AL Media during the day.
Okay. The mayor's meeting with President Obama. Well, he's met with him before. With President-elect Trump, but seemingly is a good thing.
It is. The reality.
That's one of those
is,
why can't we all get along moments.
Well, I think as Rick Pearson said, you want a mayor of the big cities to be able to work with the federal government, regardless of who the president is. And there are a lot of things that go on that are beyond partisanship and ideology and politics. And you would hope that any mayor of the city could have a working relationship with the president of the United States.
We'll get back to my favorite topic, Mike Madigan, in a second. But to continue along this road for a moment. If honesty no longer matters, straightforwardness no longer matters, the truth no longer matters, how do we know what it is? How do we know when somebody's telling us that?
What's the Orwell quote about in an age of deceit, truth is a revolutionary act? Mm-hmm. I do think we can't just give up on the truth, and I do think it will matter. And
well,
yet,
it's really, I mean, on its surface, I don't care what party you are. It's an insane discussion.
Absolutely.
Truth is a core value of life.
Right. Well, you know,
amongst decent people.
There was an interesting analysis. I mean, obviously, there's been a ton of discussion of the fake news sites. And the issue is not so much, I thought this was an interesting perspective, that people believe the fake news. It's that they don't believe the real news. So everything becomes cynical. Everything becomes a National Enquirer headline.
But,
so
you know,
nothing gets believed.
What Chuck Todd said 45 minutes ago, in my opinion, is absolutely true. The fault of this is not just on the people who are buying into that crap. The fault of it is not just on the journalists who have crossed the line. And there have been some, though it is the vast minority, not the majority in any way, shape, or form. The fault of this are the politicians on both sides who, whenever they get a question they don't want to answer, go to, well, that's what you in the media do. That's what you people in the media do. Therefore, creating an alleged need for fake news and a belief to go to Facebook and a belief to go to Twitter and a belief to go to alternative places for the news. You can't have politicians whose reflex response is, well, you reporters, sure, say whatever you're going to say and then walk off.
Well, you can as long as we keep voting for them.
Well, if you keep voting for them or until journalists start standing up for themselves.
Right. Well, but you know, there's complicity all around. And I think, you know, one of the examples is that moment, which was just, I think, a horrible example, a perfect example, but a horrible moment when the cable network showed Trump for an hour and a half and all these people praising him when he was supposed to debunk the birther myth about Obama, and it became an infomercial for all these right. people endorsing him, and they let the cameras roll and they just ran it live, and there was no, you know, journalistic discretion in that.
And that was CNN, which I would argue with the big three news networks is the most fair and most
That's right.
down the middle.
It was hardly just a Fox News, you know, issue. And so, you know, it's the blurring of entertainment and journalism. It's the point where it's about making money.
But there's well-meaning people right now. And Pat, jump in on this. There's well-meaning people right now who are driving to work who mean no harm, who don't know who to trust.
I'd say, and I agree with everything you just said, but Rick raised it just a little bit when we spoke before. When you have the President of the United States meeting with the mayor of the city of Chicago, talking about issues which we believe are important, and the discussion comes up, yeah, you also have an interest in seeing this city succeed because you have business interests here. If he doesn't divest himself of that and clear that up quickly, that's going to be a problem for his presidency, because if he's making public policy decisions based on his financial interests, then that's not what he's supposed to be doing.
That detangling of his business is going to be a massive undertaking, and the smartest thing he could do would be to say, we're undertaking it right now, and it's going to take a while, but we're working on it, because it gives him time to unwind it.
When I saw that picture this morning in the paper of the mayor walking out of Trump Tower, I thought to myself, well, of course he's going to get along with Mayor Emanuel. He's got a big old building sitting here on the river that's right in the, you know, his business.
But you know, that is, and that's a perfect example. You have inside knowledge on things that most people don't, but that's an example of your lack of trust in Trump and what Trump says, which he's created by what he said and what he's done and what he said and what he hasn't done. You know, it's not good enough for the president-elect to say, hey, I sold all my stocks. Well, how do I know you're telling the truth?
Right, but just the statement by the mayor, and I'm not dinging the mayor on this, that you have business interests in here, clouds his decision-making ability to serve the public in general and not his own interests. That's conflict of interest per se.
He has to start understanding the definition of transparency, and that is, as the leader of the free world, you have to show your financial records. You have to divulge who you're in business with. You have to let the media follow you where you
go. But he's not going to do any of those things until there's consequences. And he's like the, you know, we've talked about this, like the teenage boy who can get away with it. He doesn't care. Until you stop him or you stand up or there's negative consequence for him.
Right. But when 46% of the country is going, leave him alone and stop picking on him, when he's clearly rewriting the rule book, that's a problem.
I agree. I think now, too, you got to get off him and let him go for a while. I think that's the only way this comes out. Because right now, when people have this discussion, it just seems like whiny, we lost. We're going to hit him right away. I completely agree with what you're saying.
I don't agree with that, because I think fair-minded people hear this kind of discussion and you're echoing the same thing they're concerned about. Hold that point. Coming back, we got to get to the news. 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The House is going to be in continuous session. We've scheduled ourselves to be here every Wednesday through June, starting next week. The people that I've sent to the working groups feel that progress is being made. The people I've sent to the working groups are very anxious to do a compromise, but not at the sacrifice of working people, not at the sacrifice of middle-class people on their wages and their standard of living.
Hashtag Madigan Challenge. Send me your empty chairs, because even if he's sitting in it, the chair's still empty. Eric Edelson is here. He loves when I do this. And Pat Brady's here as well. Why in God's name do we need more working groups? Haven't we had enough time to figure out the great problem we have here in this state?
Well, apparently not. I mean, these guys don't seem any closer to a solution. The governor, who, and you have been critical of Madigan for canceling meetings, now the governor's canceling meetings.
Well, why have a meeting where the main participant you need to contribute isn't contributing?
Well, that was...
What is Mike Madigan contributing to?
Well, that was
Madigan's
point about why not meeting with Rahner, because Rahner wasn't contributing. But let's not... I don't want to play that seventh grade game or fourth grade game. I don't think...
Eighth grade.
Sorry, I didn't mean insult.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
It's a tough couple of years, wasn't it, Steve?
Yeah. Yeah.
How many years were you in eighth grade?
Four.
But I don't think... Look... We've said it many times. I'll say it again. A lot of blame to go around. Let's get to a solution. But, you know, the governor, it's a little Trump-esque. He runs out and says, the campaign's over. Politics are over. Let's all be serious and mature. And then he puts up these attack websites. He sends video trackers into the General Assembly.
Okay, but seriously, Eric, I love you. You're one of the smartest guys I know. How do you get to Mike Madigan? What is Mike Madigan offering that's anything other than what Mike Madigan wants at any time in recent history, ever?
Well, I think they're making progress on workman's comp. I think the fact of the matter is, and I do agree with Rick, look, the agenda that the governor laid out was an anti-worker, anti-union agenda. And a lot of it, most of it, had nothing to do with the budget. Now, yes, the speaker can be intransigent, and I think it can be a frustrating process. But I do think, unlike anybody else, he was standing up to a governor who wanted to pass policies that help billionaires and millionaires and, frankly, have devastated social service agencies, schools, and a whole lot of other people in the state. So you may not like his tactics, but I think this notion that, oh, I wish he would have had something done, a bad deal is worse than no deal at all sometimes. And I think that's been the case here.
We've tried no deal for a couple of years. Yeah, how about we get a deal?
He doesn't want a deal. And the reality is this meeting today, they over the weekend, the speaker said, oh, the governor doesn't want to talk about the budget. So they turned it around on him on Tuesday, said, hey, you present your parameters for a budget. And the speaker's response was, well, we're not prepared to. Now, this is after 2.5 years. They've had these working groups going from the first day that the governor.
Because there's no intention to.
There's no intention. The bottom line, it is he doesn't want to compromise on anything. And whether this is sticking up for the working people or whatever, the speaker will not compromise on anything. He wants to drive this into a crisis because that's good for him politically.
How are we not already there?
Well, we're just the stopgap budget's coming up here in the next couple of weeks, and the state really is going to go broke. But the reality is of the 44 things the governor started on, we're down to two. He won't agree to any of those, even term limits, which 80% of the state supports. So.
And if you take term limits off the table, now we're talking about workman's comp. What percentage?
Well, now we're talking about the property tax freeze.
Or property taxes.
Rick was right about that, but property tax freeze, which is wildly popular too. But the reality is the governor has said he will put some kind of revenue on the table, which is something for a Republican to do. That's pretty amazing.
Why does it,
it's not going to be an income tax increase. It's going to be a service tax. But the reality is the speaker has said, and he said this through Lou Lang the other day, they don't see ever getting a budget because they want to drag this into the next election.
Well, yeah, but Susana Mendoza's already said, though, she's going to withhold pay, too, just like Leslie Weaver
did. Well, yeah, but the six Democrat legislators are now suing the controller to get their paychecks. That's how tone-deaf some of these Democrats are.
Yeah, but I disagree with the premise that the Democrats and Madigan do not want a deal. For a year and a half, we've talked about Rauner not wanting a deal because he wants to burn the whole thing to the ground. He doesn't believe in a whole lot of excess government. He had said during the campaign, why don't we let them all go on strike? We'll fire them and start over. I'm prepared to take that and make that happen. So he's the guy that's sort of like a lot of these Washington Republicans in the House has said, I don't really believe in big government.
Okay, but if nothing Governor Rauner says matters, the governor of the state, if nothing he says matters, then why even show up? Why don't we just turn it over to Mike? Madigan's been running the state forever, in my opinion, anyway. Why don't we let just Madigan run it? Because it sure is running well. It's going so well now. Well, listen, I think property taxes are an important issue. I think term limits are an important issue. I think workman's comp is an important issue. I support the union people who have put aside benefits. They should get it all. But we got to have a friggin' budget. It's the bare minimum.
I totally agree, Steve, but I'm going to make this point again. And I agree there's a lot of blame to go around. But the fact of the matter is you might think that Madigan's been in charge. Whether you do or you do not, the fact of the matter is, and these are facts, these aren't alt-right blogs, the state is in worse shape since Governor Rauner took office than it has been at any time in its history. The changing variable in there is not Mike Madigan. It is Bruce Rauner.
Well, here's what I'll take exception with that. And we can talk about the one issue on the budget, which in place or whatever blame you want to. I've stated what I think the accurate position is. But the reality, this state government runs a lot better. I work closely with a lot of these state agencies, and they put some people in here. They're putting in reforms to how the accounting systems work, how the computer systems work. The state is actually running a lot better. The only thing that they cannot get done right now is a budget deal, and that's because the speaker does not want a budget deal. He wants a crisis mode to carry this into 2018. So a billionaire like J.B. Pritzker or Chris Kennedy, a millionaire, multimillionaire, can run for president or governor as a Democrat.
Is there a limit to how many stopgaps you can have, though? Because what if they do it again? What if they say there'll be a stopgap till March, then a stopgap till December? I mean, is there a limit to that? Can they just keep
No, but I think that's what the speaker wants. He wants a constant crisis to carry into the campaign.
No, I disagree.
He does not want to give.
I think Rauner wants.
And they've
that.
Said this. Lou Lang said this the other day. We'll go the entire time. One of Madigan's leaders in the House, we will go the entire 4 years without a budget. That's the mindset of the Democrats. It's all about policy.
Well,
it's not about
you're
politics.
You're only talking about half that sentence, Pat. The other half of the sentence is if it's going to hurt working people, if it's going to benefit billionaires.
See, how does term limits hurt working people?
Yeah, that is such a hot-button issue.
We're not talking about term limits. We're talking about a budget.
The easy go-to point. We got to take a break. This is the easy go-to point for everybody. If it's going to hurt working people and if taxes go up and everybody goes nuts. Oh, I don't want my taxes to go up. I don't want to be hurt because I'm a working person and nobody else does anything else. It's a budget. Get it done.
And if the governor submits something that the speaker, with the votes that he has, turns down summarily, then if I'm the governor, I'm not submitting anything either. And if the speaker won't submit anything, then nothing gets done. So the people then go to work. We get up tomorrow. We do the same thing. It's Groundhog Day for lunatics. When are we going to pay attention enough to fix this?
Well,
and we'll be back on 720 WGN. History will be made. The top 70 players in the world will compete in the 2017 BMW Championship September 14th through the 17th. This is a great event. I've been lucky enough to play in a Pro-Am several years when it's in town over at Conway Farms. And it's a great event run by great folks and the Western Golf Association people. It's just great. It's a great event. And the best golfers in the world will be here. So this is a good time for you to get tickets. Good Christmas present for the golf nut in your life. Or buy them for yourself. Conway Farms, where the PGA Tour playoffs take their next step next fall, and you will be there, or you'll be there grinning because you got tickets for your dad and you or your mom, and you get the deal. Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose, Sergio Garcia, Zach Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Luke Donald, Graham McDowell, Brendan Grace, maybe Tiger Woods, Phil. It's a great gift this holiday season. The top 70 in the world at that point will be there. Exclusive ticket package is now available. Go to BMWChampionship.com today. Back with Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein. Eric's about to go on a trip to get away from me. He's chosen Africa because he doesn't think I can follow him there. When are you leaving, by the way?
A week from tomorrow.
That sounds like a great trip.
It will be good. It's a trip of a lifetime, taking kids and cousins.
But didn't you tell me off the air that one of the experts on the trip said at night in one of the camps, you can't get out of the tent because the lions will eat you?
Yeah, they said, but there's an air horn in there. I said, are you kidding me? What exactly does the air horn do? The lion just says, like, yeah, okay, you're making noise. I'm not going to eat you.
I'm still hungry.
All right, back to, Trump's hair sort of lion-like, right? He's got a little bit of that going on.
Indeed.
All right, so let's go back to the Trump thing for a second here, because the appointments, and again, I stand by what I said November 9th. You got to support him as much as possible and call him out where you believe that he needs to be called out. The concern that I have for his appointments aren't that deep, but the ones I do have concerns for are pretty significant. And this EPA appointment yesterday flies right in the face of any cooperation with Democrats and really any sense of logic. So what do you know about Mr. Pruitt?
I'd say that this is probably a reaction to what the Obama administration did. A lot of people on my side of the ledger in the business community think that the EPA went nuts in the last 7 years, whether you agree or disagree with climate change, and they overregulated. And this is just a reaction to that.
But you don't hire an arsonist for the fire department. Well, he's never going to get confirmed.
Maybe not. And this may not have been the greatest pick. But the reality is this is a reaction. And the business community will like this to what a lot of people feel was way too much regulation in the Obama administration.
You know, Oklahoma is literally ground zero for the fracking industry. And in Oklahoma, there were less than 100 earthquakes 5 years ago. And every year it's ticked up. In fact, in 2015, there were 900 grade 3 or whatever the designation is, three or stronger
or higher
earthquakes,
right,
in the state of Oklahoma. So the state, under the attorney general, studied it, and they used all the oil and gas researchers who populate all the universities, and they said there's absolutely no correlation between fracking and the increase in earthquakes because that state is a wholly owned subsidiary of the oil and gas industry. And now, you know, whether you believe you're overregulated or not, you know, if that's the case, then be honest and stand up and say, let's get rid of the EPA. Let's get rid of something that a Republican administration created.
Didn't Trump say that, by the way? Didn't Trump say that at some point
Nixon
during the campaign?
EPA, by the way.
Yeah, it was a Republican creation.
But during the campaign, didn't Trump want to get rid of the EPA, or am I making that up?
He was just kidding.
Oh, wait, that's
we
right.
We just talked about that earlier.
I forget what you say. Doesn't
kidding.
Matter.
That was fake news, Steve. Come on.
Hey, there is good news out of Washington, though. They and hats off to Vice President Biden. They got through a $6.5 billion cancer research funding, which I think is good for a lot of people,
very
including he lost his son. And I think a lot of people, I think that's long overdue. So congratulations as they bid farewell to him and to Senator Kirk.
Yeah, I've got a cousin that's in the fight for his life right now. Everybody knows somebody that's dealing with cancer and or has dealt with it. So that's great news.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than one night should.
Live from Channel 9, there's Dane. You're in New York tomorrow?
Tomorrow I will be in New York City.
What are you doing there?
I am interviewing the cast of this new movie called Hidden Figures. That is a true story about some African
about figures that are hidden?
Well, sort of. Figures as in va-va-va-voom, the women's figures.
Uh-huh.
Women who worked, African-American, three African-American women who worked at NASA back in the 1960s, who did a lot of the work, revolutionized a lot
unsung
of
heroes.
The technology unsung heroes while, getting a zero of the credit.
So, that's cool.
Taraji P. Henson, Octavia Spencer, the Oscar winner, Janelle Monáe, Kevin Costner is in the movie.
Is he a black woman?
He can play a black woman.
Mm.
Can play a black woman. Mm. Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory.
Definitely a black woman.
Sheldon Cooper.
Yep.
He's in the movie. And it's hard to see him as anything except Sheldon now.
That's the problem, right? When you have a hit sitcom.
Yeah, I can't.
That's the deal. That's why for, all those years when I played Meathead on All in the Family, people only see me as Meathead.
Right, right. He's talking. It's 1960. He's talking to John Glenn and goes, bazinga.
Exactly. By the way, John Glenn in the hospital. We hope he's okay, but man, long life. Heck of a run. We hope that it continues.
You know, I got to say, while I was watching this movie, I meant to look it up and I forgot. I wondered if he was still alive.
Yeah, he is alive, but he's not feeling
you
great.
You can't kill a John Glenn. That's when they stop making men like him.
You're not lying about that. Those cowboys that were the original astronauts, holy mackerel, those guys are studs.
What a stud breed of guys those were.
By the way, do you know how long John Glenn has been married?
No.
To the same woman?
No.
73 years.
God bless him.
Think it'll last?
How about that? Well, I would hope so, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I don't want to say anything, but 68 of those years he was in space. So that's really not that hard.
That's a fair point.
When you're orbiting the Earth for 68 years, it's not that hard.
They each had their space.
That's good for them.
I get it, Andrea.
I think that was supportive. It may have been an insult. I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll talk about hairspray. I don't know if you know, but you can't stop the beat.
Did you watch this last night?
I watched like 10 minutes of it.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
It was good. I saw a lot of it.
The inaugural committee having trouble getting anyone to perform. So if you got a kid that plays the piccolo or the flute, you may get a gig in Washington in January.
I know I've been critical of the president, but I've been wanting some venue to show off my Jew's harp skills.
Oh, let me tell you something. That's going to be tremendous for you. If he doesn't get somebody hired soon, a guy doing arm farts may be the lead at one of the balls. Will and Grace may be coming back. All of that on the way. We'll get to Dean after we get to this at 8:18. Mary's back. Oh, don't forget, Mary, CLTV at 9 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're on CLTV every day. As a matter of fact, in CLTV today, if you watch CLTV, it's always fun to see which hat I'm wearing. And today I have one of the Queen's crowns on. So that'll be a lot of fun for you.
A lovely tiara.
Yeah, thanks. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 9720. 8:23 now. Dean's going to be doing a Sunday show at the Paramount Arts Center in Aurora. And the good news is it looks like the snow will be gone in the morning, and then it'll come back late in the afternoon.
Oh, perfect for me driving back to the city. Staying at your house.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm relatively close to there. Or you could swing by the Double Wide in East St. Louis. Either one are open to you.
That's what that's the one that I like.
That's the one everybody wants to visit. All right, so hairspray last night, it appeared to be technically pretty flawless. You know, it's a live show. I was hoping for a couple of actors to run into each other or something to happen.
Yeah, nothing like that. They had some problems with microphones, some problems with lighting, nothing major, but there were some dropouts, really minor technical things. I think overall, just from a critical standpoint, was pretty good. I think the music is great in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I like the show anyway, and it's fun. It's winds up being kind of very meaningful. It's a story about racial equality and so forth.
And dancing
and plenty of dancing and getting on the Corny Collins TV show. That's a big deal. The performances were, for the most part, I think that they were pretty good.
Andre, watch this. You can compare notes. Who did you not like?
I was not crazy about... I thought some of the actors, not that they were bad, I just think that they were miscast a little bit. I liked Sean Hayes. I liked Sean Hayes.
I did, too.
What did he do?
He played the guy that owns the big and tall clothing store, Mr. Pinky's. And he just didn't seem right for that part.
You agree?
To me.
Yeah, he was a little over the top. I loved Jennifer Hudson. I thought she stole the show. And I loved Derek Hough as Courtney Collins.
In her singing, Jennifer Hudson. But didn't you think, she played Motormouth Maybell, who was the mother to these teenagers. Didn't she seem the same age as the teenagers?
Yeah, it was a lot. And Derek Hough, too.
It seemed like it should have been an older actress. Like Queen Latifah played her in the movie, and I thought was great. But when Jennifer Hudson sang, brought the house down.
Oh, yeah.
By far, best musical performances.
What about Harvey Fierstein? How was Harvey?
Voice, I like that character.
I mean, it went on for a long, long time. Shouldn't that have been a smaller part?
No, I think the part is right. I just think his voice has got.
I don't
so
know. It's
gravelly.
An awful lot of this in a dress.
I had to get a Geiger counter to understand what he was saying.
Me too, Dean. When he was singing, I thought, "Oh, please, just don't sing."
Right.
Just don't sing a long number.
Martin Short.
He did American Pie, which seemed like the wrong musical
probably
choice.
Probably not a 9-minute song.
Freebird.
Harvey Fierstein was Edna Turnblad, and Martin Short was her husband, Wilbur Turnblad, who was hilarious.
He was great.
I got to give Martin Short credit, because when you get the script and you realize Harvey Fierstein's your husband in a dress, or your wife in a dress, and he's actually Harvey Fierstein, and you go, I'm in. That's a commitment to the part.
That's a commitment to the part. Kristen Chenoweth was great in it.
Loved her.
I loved Ariana Grande. I am really liking her as an actress when I see her in.
Is she the donut licker? Things,
Was she the donut licker?
Yeah.
She went into a Hollywood donut shop with her friends and licked a bunch of donuts.
That's going to be her life description for Steve from now on. She's a really good actor. She did a really great job last night.
She put the bandaid on the back of her headshot.
Derek Hough was great as Courtney Collins. Ephraim Sykes played Seaweed.
Is that the guy from the FBI?
He is now. That would be Zimbalist Jr. For those of you under 90 years old who might not know that. Ephraim Sykes is one of the original actors from Hamilton, the musical. All the kids are talking about that show.
Yeah.
But he was amazing. And a little girl who played his sister, Little Inez.
She was cute.
Shahadi Wright Joseph was her name. She was a scene stealer. Andrea Martin could read in the phone book as far as I'm concerned.
I completely agree. She's fantastic.
She was hilarious. And when Rosie O'Donnell came out as the gym teacher, I know she's very polarizing and some people don't like her, but when she said, let's play dodgeball, Rosie O'Donnell was funny.
I tweeted this out last night. How could they not have Trump do a walk-on?
Oh, completely.
The show's called Hairspray.
Yeah.
Hairspray.
Yeah.
They should have just had him just in a drive-by. He's sitting in a chair getting his hair sprayed. Come on.
That would have been great.
Could have done. They had this guy, what's his name? Darren Gliss from Glee.
Oh, yeah. He was kind of not the host.
He was the most annoying and unnecessary.
I completely agree.
I was screaming at the TV set every time that he came on.
I don't think they needed him, Dean. You know, they could have just faded.
Not.
Because when they went to the commercials and you had the two shot of what's going on behind the scenes, you can just watch that. Yeah, Darren Criss did a few too many woos.
Right. He was a little way, like the fake enthusiasm really got annoying. Really, that was my main criticism of the whole thing. I liked that they showed a little of the behind the scenes. And during the commercials, they had a little window in the bottom corner of your screen so you could see what was going on the set while you were watching commercials. Not so sure if I was an advertiser, if I would have liked that there was
something. Don't look at the product.
Right. But I thought that was really interesting. So overall, I liked it. I thought it was really fun. That said, the early ratings have just come out.
And
it beat Empire last night, which is significant. But the ratings are down 25% from The Wiz, the musical that they did last year.
Frankly, I forgot they did The Wiz.
I sort of did, too.
Yeah.
I was talking to Dave
about this morning, and Andrea didn't seem to agree, but I think Dave's on board with me. A musical version of Death of a Salesman next year.
I think it'd be great.
Right?
Can't miss.
Nope. I don't know.
No,
shouldn't take long.
It's going to be Bye Bye Birdie, I believe.
Is that the one for next
year? The next
year?
One with Jennifer Lopez.
Or is that...
It's the next TV
How about
one?
To Kill a Mockingbird?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
No. That's terrible. Or Catcher in the Rye. Ooh, Catcher in the Rye.
Catcher in the Rye. Catcher in the Rye.
Da, 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 da. So for Bye Bye Birdie, please tell me that Jennifer Lopez is not going to play the Anne Margaret character.
I do not know what she's going to play, but that's what I've been hearing.
I am on
pins and needles.
Jennifer, wait, let's see. She's set to star.
I love you, Conrad. Yes, we do.
I like the musical, but she's about 30 years too old to play.
Turn in later
character.
When Dean and Mary and Andre have Broadway Corner.
We're happy.
Go over all of this. Will and Grace coming back?
Theater. Today, Megan Mullally was doing interviews. By the way, I'm going to be talking with her next week.
Love her.
Yeah.
Love her husband.
Going to be talking with her.
Fun couple.
Going to be talking with Bryan Cranston and James
Love
Franco.
Love him.
For that new comedy.
Who was the other one you mentioned?
That's next week. Bryan Cranston.
No, after that.
James Franco.
So Will and Grace is going to happen?
She is saying, we're not rehearsing or anything like that, but based on that webisode that they did, that
great.
Political webisode that was hilarious, there are talks going on, and she says it's very, very, very likely that Will and Grace could be coming back to NBC.
Well, they're all available. Why not?
One of the funniest shows ever on television.
I agree.
And who are the most popular celebrities on Twitter?
This is an interesting list. Who would you think might be the number one?
Well, I don't know. Do you consider Trump a celebrity?
I think we would consider him a celebrity, but he is not on the top 10.
All right, Taylor Swift.
Is number three.
Beyonce.
Is not on the list.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Slim Whitman.
Is not on the list.
Boxcar Willie.
No, you're just trying to get me to yodel.
And Margaret.
All Steve has to do is say Slim Whitman.
Alan Krzyzewski.
Katy Perry would be number one.
Wow, how about that?
The most followed celebrity, 94 million followers.
That's 47 million per boob.
Justin Bieber comes in after that, then Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. President Barack Obama, Rihanna. After that, it's Lady Gaga, Ellen DeGeneres, Justin Timberlake, Kim Kardashian, and Britney Spears.
Oh, sorry.
And Britney Spears.
And Britney Spears. And Kathy from the Eric and Kathy show. Was she up there?
Is not on the list, oddly, as it turns up. Nor is Eric.
Steve Dale from Pet Central?
Number 11.
Okay.
But then there's a lot of chihuahuas on Twitter.
I was in a band called A Lot of Chihuahuas.
I know you were.
Yeah. All right, listen, great talking to you, and I don't know what you do for a living, but I like it.
I will be talking to you from New York City tomorrow morning.
And, again, Dean live at the Paramount on Sunday, doing a number of his favorite show tunes. It's 8:33, and we're back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. I'm gonna make this place show.
8:43. Ty Pennington got real famous real fast with the Extreme Makeover show. Remember you'd come into your house? You know, you'd have a compelling story to tell. Like, Dave, you have a family of 47.
Yeah, we've had some tough times.
You need a little space.
I need a little more.
And I would argue that in the spate of reality TV that we've had to put up with, it was one of the most enjoyable, family-friendly hit shows, period. I mean, it was just something you could always watch. You'd feel good at the end because
upbeat.
The bus would move.
Move that bus.
Move that bus! They'd move the bus, and you'd feel good about the results. Ty, good guy. And Ty paid for all his houses. I don't know if you know that.
That's pretty generous.
Yeah, he's a generous guy. Ty now talking about the Not Alone Foundation. It's one of many honors in his life, and it's nice to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. How about you guys?
I'm good. I want you to move that bus. Move that bus!
Yes. Well, the bus is, I don't know if you heard, but we got a flat. it's in the process of being changed right now.
I got to tell you, though, I meant what I said. It was one of the most enjoyable shows to be able to watch with kids, with family. It just always felt good when the family got the new house.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I mean, look, it was I remember when we started really getting you know, some pretty good numbers early on. And I just remember, like, ABC saying, like, you know, you guys are doing great things for network, because it really brought back that Sunday night magic that they used to have, like, way back in the day.
And
I mean, but honestly, I don't think there's ever going to be a TV show that, I mean, let's face it, the entertainment industry is not about, about, you know, making too many lives incredibly better or really changing the world.
It's about making money.
To have a TV, you know, having a TV show where you actually really change the direction a family was going and really had people coming together to lend hands to make a difference in people's lives. And not only that, honestly, a story that, you know, you really dive into and realize the struggle that people deal with on a daily basis, but then, you know, in the process, build a home that really changes the way people live in less than a week. Like, I just don't think it's ever going to happen. And it's funny, the guy from Coldplay once said, you know, it's the best and worst show on television. The worst just because it's on television, the best because it actually makes a difference. So
yeah, well, listen, you did a lot of good, regardless of it not being on anymore, and you would hope it would be in some form, but you did a lot of good with a very likable crew. The crew of people that worked on the show, the tradesmen, craftsmen, they're all very likable people, and they've all gone on to pretty good stuff. I see them popping up on different things.
Yeah. In the beginning of that show, the producers really had a different idea of what the show was going to be, but I think it's because of the personalities of the human beings that worked on the show, it became the sort of feel-good show that it is, because originally it really wasn't meant to be that. And I think that's the beauty of, you know, human nature, is that you can sort of, and I also think the best things in life aren't sort of just created by one person. I think they sort of find their identity on their own, and Extreme was like that because of the people that, you know, were involved in it. And it wasn't just the people that you guys recognized on TV too. It really was the people behind the scenes that put on the blue shirts and volunteered. Because we had people that, you know, like a painting crew we worked with in Seattle that ended up, like, becoming sort of like deadheads and following us around and helping us with every house for, like, you know, like 7 to 12 different builds.
And, oh, that's cool.
You guys are all the way down to Kansas, you know, and I was like, so yeah, I mean, it was really good people coming together on and off, you know, the TV screen. It's just really people doing good things for other human beings. And that was the best part, is like actually knowing that whether the cameras are rolling or not, we're actually doing, you know, really good stuff. So yeah, it was probably, as far as television goes, one of the coolest things I'm ever going to do in my life, I would imagine.
Yeah, speaking of doing things for other people, Love American Diner Revival. Talk a little bit about that, too. I mean, that's really neat. It's giving people who are struggling in their businesses for whatever reason, mainly because the aesthetics of their business, you're helping them really put it back together.
Yeah, I mean, that's one. Look, it's sort of the same thing I do very well, which is, you know, sort of making over spaces in very limited time. But to be able to do it where, you know, sometimes a business is a family's livelihood, and to be able to like work with a team there and make it over and make it better, and then seeing like literally the business skyrocket after what we've done, it's pretty awesome. But not to mention, you get to eat afterwards, which is a really added ingredient that I think really helped out well for me.
Let's be honest, that's the whole scam. That's why he pitched the show. He goes into these guys, he goes, right, I'll fix the diner. I'll fix this place up. I'll rehab it. But somebody's going to give me dinner. That's the deal. The Not Alone Foundation is doing their 5th annual Diamond Awards Charity Gala. And this year's theme is Excellence Personified. And amongst the award winners is our pal Ty Pennington and Dionne Warwick, who will be performing live. How'd you get involved with these folks who do this amazing work in regards to people with kidney disease?
Well, I tell you what, man, Not Alone Foundation, they do great stuff. Anybody who's ever known anyone or their family's been dealing with kidney failure knows that, like, because they're on dialysis and because it's just such a long and grueling process that it just drains them not only emotionally but financially, and that's exactly why they're there. So, yeah, to be able to raise money for this cause is huge. My real dad suffered from couldn't fit all the above, and that's just tough stuff, and like hopefully one day, you know, you'll be able to, like, you know, order a kidney and it'll be a match, you know, online. But we're not to that place yet. But this, you know, the Not Alone Foundation, and if you can, go to notalone.org, notalonefoundation.org, and just see what those guys are doing. If you can donate, that's what this is all about. And, yeah, it's, I've been blessed to be able to, you know, work on Extreme and work with a lot of different charities, and this is one of the ones that really does huge things for families that don't have any other way of coping and dealing with not only the financial but the emotional strain of it all.
Yeah, managing
it's your shock.
Managing it is extremely financially draining too. Right. And is did I read somewhere, Ty, that the Diamond Awards, they've given 20 or 25 grants already to kidney patients?
Yeah, that's what's amazing. It's like they're really doing great things. It's an outstanding organization, really good stuff.
Well, that's a very nice award to get. We should throw out a website. Is it notalonefoundation.org, I would assume?
Yeah, I think that's it.
NAF.org. Check that out, a research department, and let me know. And what's next for you?
Yeah. Actually, I'm, you know, I know this sounds, I'm actually going to go build a village in Africa. No kidding.
Oh, stop it. You are not.
There's this company I work with called Abode, and we figured out a way to build housing for under $7,000. And so we're building seven of these abodes that will help out sort of in the medical field as well. But yeah, it's never been done there, and so we're going to try and do 12 in about 10 days.
In Africa?
In Africa, yeah, in Tanzania, which is insane.
And I assume somebody's shooting this, so we'll be able to see it at some point?
Yeah, well, I'll definitely be able to post some stuff, and we're definitely going to see it, yeah. There's going to be some... so hopefully we'll be able to do that, and who knows, maybe even check out some of the beautiful wildlife of Africa at the same time. So, but yeah, it's a big challenge, but, you know, that's sort of my rush to try and do the impossible.
You remember Ty on Trading Spaces?
I love that show.
Yeah. Well, but people stop you for Trading Spaces or for Extreme Home Improvement?
Makeover? Both. I mean, like, Trading Spaces is one of the funnest experiences of my life. One of the craziest, because in the beginning, I didn't realize I could say no. I would be like, sure, I'll build you five pieces of furniture for this room and I'll six for the other one.
Right.
So someone said, by the way, you can say no. I was like, oh, thank you.
Ty, are you the guy?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Are you the guy at the party that someone will always come up to, though, and go, hey, I want to redo my bathroom. What do you think of these colors?
That's why he wears a tool belt all the time.
Yeah. That. Well, there's always that. There's always that.
But here's the thing. Like the rest of us, he also can't put together IKEA furniture without cursing. Yeah, so it's just like all of us.
That's true. That should be a feel in itself, just constant bleeping.
I just gave you a pitch for a new show. Ty Pennington. Ty Pennington getting one of these Diamond Awards from the Not Alone Foundation, which, again, provides great support in kidney disease relief. And thank you for the work you continue to do. Go swing a hammer. I'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks, guys.
You know, a lot of people, you'd say that, too. That'd be an insult. Hey, why don't you go swing a hammer?
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We're blown, Rebecca. Think these people found us.
And Khalid was planning an attack on U.S. soil. Maybe this is a part of that.
You're going to kill a lot of people. I have to try and stop them.
Why does it need to be you?
I'm the only one I can trust.
The hell are you doing here?
I need your help. No one can know where she is.
There's a situation at CTU.
Whatever's going on over there, it's not your job anymore.
I'm the only one who can help. The life he says he wants with me, it'll never be enough for him.
The new 24 Legacy. I don't know. Kim Potts joins us. Greatest guest ever. She's in the Guest Hall of Fame. And she's the Yahoo TV gal. What's the best way to stay in touch with what you're writing?
YahooTV.com.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing fine. Merry Christmas.
You too.
All right. So 24 Legacy. You know how I feel about 24. I mean, it convinced me I need to watch this.
I know, Steve. I know you're very skeptical. And listen, it's always going to be Jack Bauer for us. Devoted
That's
to the
right.
original 24. It is. And Kiefer has gone on to become president now, and he's doing very well.
He is doing well as president, and nobody believed in him. Here's the thing, though, you know, and part of the problem, and Andre, you know this, Kim and I, we would get together, we'd watch the original 24, and, you know, she'd braid my hair,
And then
back in the day.
Yeah. And then after the show, we'd go out and we'd rub out terrorists because we got so fired up about things. So it's an emotional thing for me.
Worked out well for all of us.
You know what? I think you have to give this new show a chance, though. It really does honor everything we love about the original 24. Kiefer is actually an executive producer on it, which I think, you know, the thing is that all of them, all of the original producers, the writers, the directors, who are all a part of this new one, they love that original series so much, and they know how much it meant to people, and I don't think that they would go into anything lightly if they didn't feel that it lived up to, you know, what we all love so much about the original series. And I've seen the pilot. It's great. It grabs you right away. It keeps you for the whole episode. The new star, Corey Hawkins, is fantastic. He plays an Army Ranger who was part of a team that assassinated a terrorist leader.
Well, how do they explain Jack Bauer not being on?
They don't. They don't address it. But they have said kind of, you know, off camera, they acknowledge that Jack is not dead. So
Kiefer,
you know,
could do a walk-on at some point.
He absolutely could. Okay. He absolutely could. Yeah, I think we definitely shouldn't rule that out at some point. One of the best things they announced at New York Comic Con earlier this year is that Carlos Bernard is going to be taking part in it as Tony Almeida.
Yeah,
I think
good.
All of us love Tony, so that's something to look forward to. I mean, it really is the kind of the 24 storylines that we loved and knew so well with Jack, with this new character who is very likable and really great in that Jack kind of role.
You haven't gone over to the other side. You're not one of the bad guys now, are you? Are you a double agent? Do I have to watch you?
I think, you know, I've been hanging out with Tony Almeida, and you never know. I might have flipped. But there is a lot to love. There's also Jimmy Smits as a senator who's running for president, and I think anytime you have Jimmy Smits in any show, you have to at least
check it out. All right, I'll watch it. I'm in.
Okay, all right. Hair braiding begins again.
All right. You got your work's cut out for you now.
Literally, though, the hair braiding is what
just one
talking
hair.
About. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about what I have left. And when does it premiere?
It premieres right after the Super Bowl on February 5th and then switches to Mondays at 8, which is the time slot we were used to having for 24. So it'll all be good.
All right. And what about Kiefer's show?
Kiefer's show is growing and growing. There's a little bit of change going on behind the scenes. There's going to be a new showrunner, which I think has less to do with any kind of upset on the show, but more just kind of a people moving around to work on other projects. But, you know, I think the thing that could have hurt it, that there was obviously so much craziness going on in real world politics, actually helped it and kind of brought people to it and drew people to Kiefer's character, who's such a great down-to-earth kind of guy. And I think also people underestimated just how much viewers love Kiefer.
All right, and by the way, a texter just texted in and said, can we pick up with 24 Legacy if we never watched the original 24?
Yes, absolutely. And it actually takes place 3 years after the 24 Live Another Day, the last one with Kiefer. But absolutely. I mean, obviously you'll probably enjoy a lot of the little nuances more if you've watched the original, but and I would suggest that that's a great thing to do during the holiday if you have some time to do some binge watching is watch the original 24, but you absolutely can jump right in.
All right. Silicon Valley, when's it coming back?
Probably, they haven't announced for sure, but I think it'll again be late April or early May. Which is what they usually do at HBO. But the fourth season should be great. We left all of the guys in such an unexpected place, and with their company back in their hands now, courtesy of Ehrlich, and I think that suggests that T.J. Miller's great character is going to have a pretty big role again in the fourth season, which I think is good news.
All right, good, good, good. Let's go around the horn. Andrea?
All right, I have two. Kim, is this the last season for Grey's Anatomy?
You know what? I don't think it is. I think that...
Oh, good God, people.
Oh, come on. Just
everyone in the hospital has had sex with everyone else.
Hold on.
Makes me want to vomit.
You know, hey, get a log.
You know what, though? It is now the, in its 13th season, it's now the second longest running scripted series in ABC history. Mm-hmm. You have to go back to The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet to find another scripted show that has run that long. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty amazing, right?
It was so good, and every now and again, it shows shades of great writing and great storytelling, but, oh, God, then when it... When you have the episode like the opera where everyone breaks into song and then, you know, they kill off McDreamy and all the major characters, then it just falls back into that jump the shark mode.
I think that what you just said, though, is it still has enough of kind of those original things that drew people in and that can, you know, kept them watching all along, that people just don't want to let go of it. And because there aren't that many shows that last that long anymore, I think it's also just, you know, there's a nostalgia for it already in that you love those characters. They've also smartly, I think, after bringing in all those new characters throughout so many seasons, they've sort of gone back to focusing a bit on the few original characters still there.
What do you like about it, Grey's Anatomy?
I like the fact that every now and again it rips at the heartstrings. You get right, Kim? Mm-hmm. You get a good episode one every 4 weeks, I would say. Isn't that right? Wouldn't you say that?
Absolutely.
All right, before you ask about your second one, when is Scandal coming back?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Scandal is back, I want to say January.
I think it's the 19th, because all they do is talk about it. They constantly have promos.
January 19th.
I think
what was the other show?
All right, the other one was Homeland. I know it's coming back. Will Quinn and Carrie finally get together?
Well, it's back on January 15th, so not too long. Season 6, it takes place in New York, which I think is really exciting because it feels like the show should have been in New York at some point already.
Switch it up. Chase Terrace in Toledo. You know, put it somewhere where you wouldn't expect.
You know, that's kind of surprising that no one has tackled that in a TV show yet. But the good news, we know that Quinn is alive. So Rupert Friend, who I think has kind of stolen the show over the last couple of seasons, he is definitely alive. He's definitely back. We don't know anything specific about what his state is, but he's definitely back, which is good news. And the whole season, Carrie's living in Brooklyn now. She's working for an agency that provides AIDS to Muslims living in the U.S. The season starts on Election Day, and it carries us through Inauguration Day, so a lot of real-world kind of things will probably be seeming like it was not accidental, although they've been working on it for quite a while before the election. So it should be a very interesting season.
I'll come back with Dave and Mary Vandeveld's questions. I also want to know about Matt LeBlanc's show. I want to talk to you about This Is Us, which is the biggest hit of the season, I think. More with Kim Potts, the TV gal, coming up. We're live on CLTV on 720 WGN, the Steve Cochran Show. Back next. Back at 720 WGN, and Kim Potts, the TV gal from Yahoo. Such a great guest. Knows everything about TV. Knows how your TV works. She can rewire your TV. She can fix your Wi-Fi. She's got it all covered. Dave, you have a question for Kim?
I do. And first, let me preface this by saying I know I'm the only one on the show who liked this particular show, but is Billions ever coming back?
Yes, actually, Billions is coming back in January as well.
Horrible characters. Horrible characters.
Okay,
unlikable,
Steve,
terrible people.
That's your opinion. I like the show.
It's like House of Cards, though. Everyone's unlikable.
Exactly. Horrible. Well, that's a better show.
But it is coming back.
It's absolutely coming back in January. Same cast. I'm kind of excited to see where it's going in season two.
All right.
At least Damian Lewis is easy on the eyes.
I'm sorry. That happened to be a show I liked. I wanted to ask about it. You've totally dissed me.
What's the name of the lead? His dad was baseball commissioner. Great character.
Paul Giamatti.
I don't need to see Paul Giamatti in S&M scenarios.
Yeah, it was one scene in the first episode. You have to let it go. Now, the other question I have to ask is about Nashville, because there's someone in my house who really likes that show.
And that would be Dave's alter ego.
Yes, it would be.
Country Dave.
Is Nashville supposed to be coming back right on CMT?
In January also, yes. This winter season, I'm telling you, is like another fall season. There are so many new shows and so many, kind of beloved returning shows that it really feels like it's a whole nother new fall premiere season.
Vandeveld, what do you got?
Okay, I think I'm the only one that watches this show besides Nick DiGilio, but it's the weirdest show. It's Scream Queens. I mean, there's so many cool people in it, like Jamie Lee Curtis, Kirstie Alley, John Stamos. Is it going to come back? Because it is bad.
That's a good question. They have not made plans for season three yet, but there are two more episodes left in this season, both airing this month. So, I would tell people keep tuning in. It is a weird show.
Oh, it's so weird. So bloody. So horrible.
But kind of like nothing else on TV, which is tough to do right now.
Yeah, that's why I'm addicted to it.
Mary, you do know you have a remote, right? And the battery's in the remote. There's lots of ways to turn your TV off.
But I just keep watching it because the actors and actresses are so good on it, but it is the strangest program ever.
It sounds like a Nick DiGilio show.
Yes.
All right, you got one more? Is that it?
I'm concerned, this whole winter season thing. Why do they have that big break in between during Christmas when you're sitting at home and you can watch TV and all the shows are gone? So what show should you be watching that you've never watched before that you can do on demand? What would you suggest?
Ooh, that's so good. Well, I'm going to catch up with several shows that people have been loving and that I haven't had the chance to watch yet. This Is Us, I kind of jumped in at the middle because everybody was talking about it so much, so now I need to go back and watch the first few episodes, which just from watching the second half is so worth it, and I think everybody's kind of agreeing that's definitely one of the bigger stories of the whole TV season. I am going to go back and watch Stranger Things, which is something I missed from last summer that people are still obsessing about on Netflix. People maybe who haven't seen the show Rectify on the Sundance Channel, it actually ends. Its series finale is next week, but it has been an amazing show, and it's something that if you kind of have some time during the holidays to sit and really lean into.
Or ignore your family.
Or ignore your family, exactly. It's not a casual watch kind of show that you can watch while you're doing other things. You really need to pay attention, and it'll grab you and drag you in. It's incredibly emotional and just a really beautiful show. And it's just a few seasons, so if you're looking for something to really, a good drama to delve into, that's a good one.
How about Westworld?
No, that's a huge hit.
It is
a huge hit. You know what? I haven't watched it yet. Some people in my office love it. Some people think it's super weird and kind of too out there.
Well, then I should watch it.
I think it's definitely another of those shows that's not really like anything else on TV.
I mean, Vandeveld is like a closet serial killer or something. I mean, there's something going on. There's no secrets
that's
in your
weird.
Life. Grizanich, you got a TV show we haven't talked about?
No, just Silicon Valley. I'm happy to hear it's coming back. This is one of my favorite shows.
With extra cursing.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the lightning round. Kim Potts, Fargo.
Fargo will be back next year for another season that I'm sure will be weird and wonderful with another great cast, and will win lots of awards again.
Lethal Weapon.
I love that. I would suggest is something that people might want to catch up with. I think people dismissed it right away as, another remake of a movie on TV.
I heard it's on the fence, or is it a hit?
It's a hit. It's doing well. Okay. I think it'll be, Fox, they kind of make some decisions that you don't expect sometimes, but definitely worth watching. Great, great chemistry between Damon Wayans and Clayne Crawford, who has been so great on Rectify.
Shameless?
Shameless ends, I think actually its season finale is this Sunday or the Sunday after. Still doing okay. I think their future is a little up in the air, though. Or this actually may be their last season. Kind
Seems
of
like
lost the buzz.
Yeah, they've run out of horrible things to do to each other.
Speaking of horrible characters that you don't always like.
Yeah, no, not a lot of likable people on that show. And then somebody said Defiance, Telenovela, Washington Spies, those are all gone?
Telenovela is gone. Washington Spies, I believe, is gone. And what was the first one?
Defiance? I don't know the show.
Oh, Defiance on Sci-Fi. Defiance, I believe, is gone, although Colony on Sci-Fi, which a lot of people really loved in the first season, with Josh Holloway, is coming back on January 12th. And The Magicians, which is another show that people have been asking me about this for a long time, and I had kind of never heard of it the first time they mentioned it, but season two is back on Sci-Fi on January 25th. So a couple of big hits for Sci-Fi there.
The Matt LeBlanc thing, is that a hit?
Man
with a plan, or too early to tell?
You know, I think it's okay. It's doing okay. It's been ordered for the full season.
Okay.
We'll give it time. Unfortunately, I think it's the reason why the upcoming season of episodes is going to be the final one.
Yeah, which is too bad, because that's a great show.
It is such a great show. Definitely, it's the fifth and final season. They haven't announced a premiere date, but definitely in 2017, we'll get to see
those
final.
It's on Showtime. Curb coming back, Wayne? Curb Your Enthusiasm?
We don't know a date. We just know that Larry has finally decided to that he's been inspired to do some new episodes.
Yeah, he got bored at the house. And you should know The Walking Dead mid-season finale on Sunday. Ratings have been down after the season 7 premiere, where 48 people got murdered with a bat. The Goldbergs Hanukkah Star Wars episode on December 14th with our pal Jeff Garland, and Big Bang on December 15th. Bernadette has her baby. All right, this is us. Biggest hit on TV. An interesting show to watch because they keep overlapping and layering back in. A great little cool sort of not done every day way to tell the story. But one of the key characters on the show is the dad who would and dad ain't going to make it. So if you have a show that's a hit and you don't know it's a hit when you pitch the show and you write a character arc that includes the death of a key character.
Don't give it away, though, because
he hasn't died yet.
Okay.
When how are they going to pull that off?
Well, you know, they very cleverly, you're right. I'm sure at some level, somebody, a network executive or someone is thinking,
we can't kill Bob.
Wish we had seen into the future on this. But no, you know, they did know that certainly. And the kind of backstory structure, the switching around and tense of the storytelling allows them to address that. There are still things we know that Jack is dead, but we don't know how. We don't know why. There's a lot of things in between, a lot of ways that his death affected everybody. We don't know how old the kids were when it happened.
It's key to the storytelling, but it's not good for the show. They got to figure something out. Maybe like an evil twin comes back, like a soap opera. I'm just spitballing here. All right, Kim Potts, where do we read you?
You can see my tweets at TV Screener and read me at Yahoo TV. We've got lots of good stuff going on there.
Thanks for watching all the TV so we don't have to. We're back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo! Woo! Ow!
Love that money!
9:45, we continue. Show number 793. On CL TV and live on 720 WGN in the Allstate Showcase Studio. My friend Elise Glink is here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
I'm concerned. Is Whispering Ben Carson the right guy for housing and urban development?
Oh, sure. He lives in a house.
He's been to an urban center.
Yeah.
And
he grew
knows,
up in public housing, like about 80 years ago.
You know, did you know that's not true? Did you know somebody shot their mouth off? Turns out he didn't live in public housing.
I think he's the one who said he lived in public housing.
Mm, slip of the tongue. But Dr. Ben did not.
Fact check at all.
But the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mae, which is part of the story today, is part of the reason there's concerns about Dr. Ben being involved with this, because this is maybe the most administrative of administrative positions in the entire cabinet.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's weighty and it's detail-oriented.
Yeah, it's 8,000 employees. It's $50 billion with a B in budget. And basically, HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, is supposed to make sure that everybody in America has housing.
Right.
That's what they do. So putting somebody in it who has said some interesting things about housing, it's going to be something.
But am I misreading this? Because my understanding of HUD is that this is not a big picture, long form policy. I'll get in a room with a think tank and think about what housing is going to look like in 5 years. This is a grind. HUD is a day to day, grind it out kind of thing. Am I wrong?
It's actually both.
Oh, it is.
So Fair housing law comes under HUD. HUD has to administer it. You've had RESPA, the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, falls under HUD. They have to administer it. They've also gone to court fighting all the fair housing cases. And so you really need somebody at the head of it who has a deep understanding of the different conflicting problems that are going on in housing right now. I mean, San Francisco's got a housing crisis. We saw it blow up in Oakland with that horrible fire, 36 people dead. And the guy said, listen, I was doing the best that I could. These people didn't have anywhere that else that they could afford to live. So there are parts of the country where affordable housing doesn't mean can you afford a $25 million condo or not.
Right. And HUD's job, as you said, the foundational job is to make sure people have a home.
It's big, important thing.
So, and I also saw a headline, and I'm going to violate one of my own rules here in citing a story I haven't read. But I saw a headline that said a building inspector in San Francisco hadn't been in that warehouse in 30 years.
Yeah, I don't know. There's been some conflicting rules. So if you watch some of the news coverage, they did have some shots of, and they were going to go back and check the badges of police officers who have been inside. They did have inspectors who, I guess, came to the door within the last couple of months. I don't know which inspectors came. It's entirely possible the building inspectors didn't get in the door.
Educate me. Educate us. Maybe you know this, Andrea, because I don't. Chicago building inspector is responsible for his or her territory.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do a building inspection, is it routine to do it every year or not every year? I mean, we got a lot of buildings.
Elevators get inspected every year, right? So you see the little form that goes in the elevator.
Yeah,
and
the
that
one guy, Otis, is really busy.
Yeah, very, very busy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they actually go out and inspect all the elevators, though. I think that it's unfair to think that with limited city budgets across the country that we're going to get inside every single house or building structure every single year. Where we do seem to have some problems in the city and other places around the country is actually getting people through or getting properties through the proper inspections as they're getting built or as they're getting renovated. And that is almost more important than whether or not you go in them just regularly.
They rely to a lot, most often, probably, Elise, you can agree to this, that from help from the public as well, too. Because think how many buildings there are. Think how many porches there are. You know, we just started, they just really started inspecting the porches after the porch collapse in Lincoln Park.
Right.
That, the water tower, also in Lincoln Park, that fell down, too. So think how many people that you have to hire to do all of that.
Yeah, you just don't get there. It's same thing with restaurants. You just don't get to all of them, although we all wish they would. And so, you know, where do you draw the line between the amount of taxes you want to pay and the number of people it takes to actually go and inspect an ever-growing number?
This is the part you don't understand. We want to pay no taxes. We want to have
gas
for our cars.
Right.
We want no hassles in our life.
And the bridge is always open.
And we want to be right about everything we say or read.
Or just make it up.
Or believe in. Or want to make it up. That's the country we now have. It's 9:50. We'll come back more with Elise Glink in a second. ThinkGlink.com. Are you doing the noon show today?
Yeah. Beyond the noon, we're going to talk Trump tweets, your favorite topic.
My head explode again.
And you only have an hour?
And if you're watching CLT,
only.
And again, if you're watching CLTV, a head this size, you don't want that to explode. It's 9:50 back after this on 720 WGN. Let me grab this quick phone call. Yes, who's this?
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
This is Darrell.
Hey, Darrell, how you doing?
Good. I just love your show. You and Anna and Kevin Paul and Vegemita Pop-O-Matic, I think you guys are phenomenal.
I think you're looking for Ro Khan. He's on at 3.
No, that's right. I'll call them later. Never mind. But I still love your show. What do you do?
I do the morning show, actually. The show that's on right now.
Steve Cochran.
Yeah,
Oh, so I apologize. I thought they were going to give me to the producer. I need to know. I'm going to your New Year's Eve show this year.
Oh, okay, good. What do you need to know?
Well, first of all, are you having one?
Sounds like a little like Margaret. Remember for that caller from
yesterday? And Margaret sounded like the cause.
I don't know why you keep doing this. I'm not Phil and I'm not Margaret.
All right, so here's the deal. 1 o'clock show at the Rau, raucenter.org, raucenter.org. And then a 6 o'clock show in Downers Grove at the beautiful Tivoli. You can go to classiccinemas.com and get tickets there. Does that help you?
Yeah, can I go to both?
Sure, that'd be great. Love to see you.
Hey, thanks. Go Hawks.
I swear that sounds like the cost.
Bye, Darrell.
Darrell, Margaret, and Phil. They all sound like the cuss. Elise Glink is here, thinklink.com. Interest rates are where? Well, let's turn your mic on. There we go.
Hello. Interest rates are rising, as it happens. So we've had this forecast, this hyperinflation since, 2008. And yet we haven't seen it. But now interest rates really are rising. And the Fed is expected to raise rates this month.
And that meeting takes place soon?
Yeah, I think it's next week. Okay. We have, it's the last opportunity of the year, obviously, because then everybody leaves for Christmas. But the Fed has given the indication that they think the economy is strong enough to raise rates. Inflation is forecast to go up next year to 2%, which is actually the Fed target, or just a little above. And I had a conversation with the National Association of Realtors chief economist, Lawrence Yen, the other day. And I'll put that up at thinklink.com later today. But what he was saying is they expect fully real mortgage interest rates to be nearly 5%, somewhere between 4.5% and 5% by the end of 2017.
That's probably the real number, and that's probably the number it could live at for a while. But if you're paying 3%, the jump to 4.5% is a lot.
So this is a really interesting point. As usual, you have picked the exact sore spot because there are not enough homes in the market for sale. I've been asking for the last couple of years where these homes are going to come from. If you open up the mortgage lending box and you let people in with lesser credit, and what are they going to buy?
Right.
So we've got home prices that are rising dramatically. But a lot of people like me who should be downsizing, I'm an empty nester now officially, I have like an under 3% rate, and there is just no way I'm giving that
up. Cheap money.
Cheap money, cheap to live there, and I'm going to live in a better quality house than I could afford to buy and pay more money for. So I'm not going to move. I think millions of people in my spot are not moving, and that means fewer houses for sale.
So the system is goofed up because you don't have the supply. You've got demand maybe where you don't have the supply. However, one last thing. The demand statistic I saw from millennials is insane. I don't know who did this study, but they're drunk. I don't know how 18 to 28-year-olds could be living on their parents' couches and be dying to buy their own house. With what?
Yeah.
Love and affection?
Student debt is really high, and until we start to see a lessening of the student debt and the ratios, I don't think anybody under 35 is really going to
be out there.
So
where are these whacked out numbers coming from?
I don't know. I was telling you off air that somebody approached me and said, oh, I've got a study I want you to promote. It says 163 million Americans are going to buy a house in the next 5 years. Really? We only have about 63 million homeowners to begin with.
Yeah, that seems slightly high.
Hello, 3 times that number. So, yeah, I don't know where these numbers are coming for. It's a little truthiness, though, in housing.
Truthiness. Look what you did there. You're on with Bertrand today.
Yeah, we're going to talk Trump tweets. More truthiness.
Nooner. Elise Glink and Bertrand for a nooner. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Always
nice
a pleasure
to
have you on. And thanks to everybody watching on CLTV. And we're back with Bill and Wendy next.